great way to begin this lesson. You know, a neat story, a joke, or something to catch your attention and wake you up. And because I'm kind of struggling with just the introduction, just the concept of the lesson that I'd like to share with you today. And I guess maybe I just need to ask you, try and stay awake. It's not a joke. Put your thinking caps on, because what I want to share with you is somewhat begins abstract, or in our minds, I think Americans' minds, this is an abstract thought. But I want to get us to the concrete reality of what this is about. And I've entitled it, The Bond Between Love and Truth. And there's a neat passage in 1 Corinthians 13 that says, love rejoices with the truth. And so as we come to these concepts of love and truth, and it's something we're all interested in. We're all interested in love. We're all interested in truth. But as I said, it's kind of abstract. And I get the illustration in my mind of jumping into the deep end of a pool. If you're a good swimmer, that's not a problem. And if you're not a good swimmer, that can be a problem. And so some say, well, this might be a little, you know, scary, a little deep, a little something that maybe we shouldn't do in a sermon. We should do in a, you know, discussion group or something along that line. Well, I want you to know I'm a good swimmer. I'll keep you floating if you'll just hang with me for a minute. And in a little while, we're going to get into the shallow end of the pool. So just stay with me. You know, when we think about the Bible, I can sum up the Bible really simply, the whole Bible, in just a few sentences, the few sentences I have here on the screen. If you want to sum up the entire Bible, this is it. God created a perfect world that mankind promptly broke and could not fix. God prepared the world so that he could fix it, which he did when he became a man. He lived as we were meant to live, then took our punishment so that we could live. Those who received this gift by faith are now in the process of becoming like him. That's the Bible. That's every sermon ever preached. That's a biblical sermon. It has something to do with all those statements. Doesn't matter what it is. We could go back and say, oh, this is what you were talking about. You can put each of those in a single word. And then it becomes a little deeper, a little more hard to understand. Creation. Sin. Predestination. Incarnation. Propitiation. Grace, faith, sanctification. That's what I just said in the sentences. I said them in single words. And every one of those words is found in the Bible except for one, incarnation. I don't think that's in the Bible. It's a word that sums up God became man. That's all that word means. But you can take those and, you know, we can understand creation, but we kind of get a little deep when we get into the concept of sin and then predestination. What's that all about? Incarnation, that's a deep subject. Propitiation, that's the atonement, the atoning sacrifice. And so we can sum that up, and every lesson that's ever preached, biblical lessons, can go back to one of those words. And then, you know, in the early years, as you're a Christian, as you're first learning, maybe as a child, as you're learning about the Bible, you start out with these real simple stories that if you are fortunate enough to begin early in your life with these simple stories, you hear the stories of the creation. And what's the elementary? What's the elementary teaching right now? What class? Moses. All right, you're learning Moses right now. The story of Moses and the giving of the law. All these simple things. And then then as you jump into a little deeper water and you are encouraged as Christians to grow in your faith, you build on these stories and you grow in these stories, and these words then begin to take on deeper meaning in your life and in the way you live your lives. Over in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 1, the writer there said, "Let us leave the elementary teachings of Christ." Let's get away from just the elementary. He said, you've been hanging in the elementary so long. He says, it's time to go on to maturity. And then some of the elementary things he states, if you read in Hebrews 6, 1, you say, well, that's not real elementary. Some of those are kind of deep. But that's okay. He says, those are elementary. You need to jump into some deeper water. And some people don't read the book of Hebrews because it's just too deep. And I'm here to encourage you to read and study and grow in your knowledge of Jesus and the Bible and your Lord and the application of that in your life. And so when it comes to really, really the philosophy of a sermon, what am I doing up here? And I struggle, well, how am I going to communicate to a wide range of people here, different ages, different levels of maturity? And at first I thought, well, I don't even need to talk about this. It's maybe be too much. But then I thought, well, that's kind of condescending. It's me saying I'm smarter than you. I'm no more than you. And I thought, no, you're as smart as me. And so let's jump into the deep end a little bit. And then we'll get into the shallow end when we put it into some real, hopefully some practical ways. I want to talk about the world of unthought. Michel Foucault, French man, 20th century atheist philosopher, he coined this word in his writings and in his speeches, the world of unthought. And as I said, he wasn't a Christian, but he came to recognize this is how the world lives. This is how the world lives, in a world of unthought. And he's describing the condition of the world in which there's numerous beliefs, and they're treated as they're stated to us. They're treated as unchallengeable truisms. They're considered self-evident. It's common sense. Everyone knows this is true. And when they're thrown out in a conversation, in a debate, they're meant to just shut down the conversation. You can't go any further. You can't actually discuss these things because these are true and that's it. Let me give you some. Keep your religious views to yourself. You have no right to judge me. That stops the conversation real quick. Who's to say what is right and wrong? Who's to say what's right and wrong? Truth is relative. Just be yourself. Don't care what other people think. Follow your heart. You deserve, or I deserve. You can't know anything for certain. And there are many, many more of these that are just in the world of unthought, that we don't think about these things. They're just, we inherit them through our society. They're fed through us through these little memes. Is that how you say the word? I always mispronounce that. Memes? Is that right? All right. And those are truisms, right? And sometimes you read those on Facebook and go, oh, I don't know about that. Have you ever done that? But they're stated as truism. They're being fed to you through movies and television and politics, social media, our educational system. And they're perpetuated in our private conversations. When we're talking to one another, they're thrown out a lot of times, and we just go, it stops, like I said, it stops the conversation. We don't actually think. In fact, it's wrong for us to say, I don't know about that. Who says I can't judge? Who says religious views are private? Oh, everyone knows that's true. You see, everyone knows. So it's this constant battle that we're in. And if you're a Christian here today, I want you to wake up at this point. And then later on, I want you to wake up again. But at this point, I want you to wake up just to say this. I want you to learn to take in what people say, take in your Facebook post, and begin to think Is that true? Is that the way I need to live my life? Instead of just taking it in. We need to be people who think these things through and live our lives based not on unthought, but thought. Thought battles unthought. Thinking battles this worldly unthought that goes around us. Is this clear? This is not too philosophical, is it? All right. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Ed, do you know? All right. Yeah, okay. He's like, I don't know. Unthought. Sorry. Thinking, you know, taking these things in every day, everything that comes into our mind, and we need to begin thinking, because it's part of your walk to be a thinker, and it's part of my work as a Christian leader to help you learn how to think, to open up your mind and think correctly. And here's our struggle. As a Christian leader, I'm as tempted as you are to be drawn away into the world of unthought. Just to accept things as people are saying things. I like to put my mind in neutral and just coast along. Go with the flow of society. It's far easier than to think. I like to just throw out the platitudes of the day, the meme of the day. Sound smart. And then just go on without really thinking, what am I saying? It's hard to fight unthought. It's hard to go against the flow. It's hard to use your brains. But we are called, as I said, as Christians, to be people who think, not to be people in the world of unthought. Over in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 17, and I've read this several times to you, but it's one of my favorite sections of the scriptures, because Paul says, so I tell you this, and I insist on it in the Lord. I insist on this, Paul says. He's making a statement here that he's trying to wake us up, and he's saying, I'm insisting that you do this, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. Don't live like the world in the world of unthought. That would be a paraphrase. Don't live just letting your mind being in neutral. They are darkened in their understanding. They're separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. They're just not listening. They're listening to the world and they're taking these things in. And then down in verse, he says, you weren't taught this way in verse 20. When you came to know Christ, you were actually taught. It says you were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. There's truth there and you were taught that. And to be taught, you have to think, right? If you're in a class and you're being taught, you have to think if you're going to get anything. He says, you were taught. And he says, with regard to your former way of life, put that off. And then he says, and to be made new in the attitude of your mind. Part of being a Christian is that your mind, and this means being continually being made new. Your attitude is being refreshed every day by what Jesus has taught us, by the word. And then in Romans 12, verse 2, he says there, I only have part of it on the screen here. Let me go over here where it says, do not be conformed no longer to the pattern of this world, the world of unthought, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Your mind is being changed on a continual basis by the renewed. Your mind is being renewed. And then he says, then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is. His good, his pleasing and perfect will. You want to know what God's will for you is? This is how you do it. Renew your mind. And I could paraphrase this. Then you'll be able to think. You'll be able to think. You won't need other people to tell you how to think. You're not just going to drift through life. And so I want us to think about truth and love today. I want us to put our thinking caps on a little. These words are abstract in our way of we grow up in a Greek philosophy kind of atmosphere. We inherited a lot from the Greeks 3,000 years ago. We think like them a lot. And one of the ways the Greeks thought and we think is abstractly. And so when I use these words, truth and love, it's just, they're abstract. We don't have concrete meanings, and I'm going to try and help us there. Truth and love are not mutually exclusive. The world presents love and truth as mutually exclusive, while the scripture places them in a union with one another. Let me give you an example. The world says love is shown through tolerance. You allow other people to do with what they need to do without interference. Love is something that feels good. And so if in our interaction, if I make you feel bad, I'm not being loving. That's what the world teaches. The world says this, truth is relative. Your truth may not be my truth. We have different perspectives, and so your truth is different than my truth. Truth that is presented as absolute, this is absolutely true, is mean-spirited, and it's wrong. But the scriptures show that love and truth work in union with one another. In fact, they complement, they complete one another. You can't love, biblical love, you can't love without truth. And truth has to operate out of love. Let me give four ways in which this is shown. First, and I'm going to zip through this so that you'll be confused and you'll have to think about it later. The goal of truth is love. Over in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5, he says, the goal of this command is love. And you know what the command was? The command was to correct some people. That was the command, and I think in verse 2 or 3, somewhere there. The command was to correct some people who were teaching wrong. And he says the goal of that command is love. And then he explains that love. And that word command there means instruction, order, command. It even means insist. The word means insist. In other words, this is something that's absolute. This is truth. And although this wouldn't be a totally accurate translation, it'd be okay to say in concept, the goal of this truth is love. The goal of truth is love. The goal isn't the command. The goal isn't for me to give you a command. The goal aims at love. That's where we're shooting for. That's the purpose of truth. The purpose of truth is to shoot for love, to aim for love. Truth is the means by which we achieve love. John was writing in his second letter to the church, and he addressed this church in this way. He says, whom I love this church in truth. And so his love is based in truth. If he didn't have truth, he couldn't have love. He couldn't have love for these people as he had. So we see the goal of truth isn't to prove that I'm right. This is where we get messed up. We think the goal of truth is to prove I'm right and you're wrong. But the goal of truth is to effect an action called love. On the other hand, the goal of love is truth. All right? We just switched that around. The goal of truth is love, and the goal of love is truth. I told you it was going to get a little... We're getting into the deep end, I think. At the same time, love aims back at truth. That first verse we looked at in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 6. Love rejoices with the truth. So we have truth and love, and how we see love is aiming back toward truth. Let me give you another example in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 4. Paul wrote a letter. If you read 1 Corinthians, and many of you have read 1 Corinthians, it can come across pretty hard. He's correcting people here. And then he refers to that when he says, for I wrote you out of great distress and anguish of heart and many tears, not to grieve you. That wasn't my goal, but to let you know the depth of my love for you. He was fussing at them. He was telling them what they were doing wrong. He was warning them. And he said, let me tell you, that was all true. And I did it because I love you so much. So you see how love and truth connect with each other. Therefore, love directs the way I speak truth. You know, there's a hard, harsh way of speaking truth. We can tell the truth sometimes in a harsh and mean way. or we can have a God-directed way of speaking truth. Ephesians 4:15, this is one a lot of us know. Speaking the truth in love. What does that mean? Well, I love you, so I can say it any way I want to. No, speaking the truth in love. Here's a good example of love speech in 2 Timothy chapter 2, starting in verse 24. I'm going to turn over there because I don't have that all on the screen. Have part of it there. It says this, and the Lord's servant must not quarrel. Instead, he must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Those who oppose him, he must gently instruct. Why? In the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth. And they will come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil who has taken them captive by his will. And so we have this, the way we speak truth, we have to learn how to speak truth in this action called love. And then tied to that, truth teaches me how to love. You know, I really won't know how to love unless God teaches me. Over in 1 John chapter 4, verse 16, it says, God is love. And so if God is love, then he will demonstrate love. He'll teach us love. And we see that over in chapter 4, verse 9, where he says, and this is how God showed his love among us. He demonstrated his love by sending his one and only son. Then in 2 John, verse 6, he shows his connection of walking in love and walking in the truth. He says, his command, and that's truth, his command is truth, is that you walk in love. So truth, as I learn truth, I learn how to love. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 6 says, you yourselves have been taught of God how to love one another. Some way God teaches us how to do these very things. And it's through the truth of God that he teaches me how I need to love. So we see this indissoluble bond between biblical love and truth. Truth's goal is to love, while love's goal is truth. Love teaches me how to speak truth, and truth teaches me how to love. Worldly love ultimately will lead me to anarchy, self-righteousness, because your truth is my truth, so there's no truth, and so it just leads to anarchy. It leads to self-righteousness because I'm right and you're wrong, and if you can define right and wrong. Worldly love ultimately leads to selfish love, and it's based on emotion, just a feeling that we're having. And so in the midst of all this, I told you it gets a little confusing when I use the truth and love, because we've all switched our brains and we're thinking in this abstract form again. So the question comes up, well, just tell me what truth is and tell me what love is. Give me something concrete, because this gets after, you know, love is truth and truth is love. And, you know, it gets a little, does it get confusing you? Because it got confusing me, and I'm actually thought about it before I got up here. So let's get in the shallow end of the pool. Let's get to something real concrete. Truth. The word really comes from a word that means not hidden, not concealed. This is something that's right there. You can see it. It's not hidden. It's not concealed. And the Bible definition and concept of the truth is not abstract theology. It's not something up in the clouds, but it's something concrete, because it's a person. It's a person. Truth is a person, and love is a person. Go to the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 9. He says, the true light, you want to know what true light, revealing, not hidden, that gives light to every man, was coming into the world. And then in verse 14, the Word became flesh, and he made his dwelling among us. That's incarnation. That's Jesus becoming a human. God becoming a human. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, and he's full of grace and truth. If you see Jesus, you see grace, you see truth. That's his point. Then in verse 16 and 17, he says, from the fullness of his grace. I love this. Well, I could preach a whole sermon on this one. is this verse. The fullness of His grace, we have received one blessing after another. One blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses. I'm glad the elementary is teaching about Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Truth is revealed in the concrete person of Jesus. Do you want to know what truth is? You've got to look at Jesus. Not in the abstract way, but in the concrete way. Knowing Jesus is knowing truth. If you know Jesus, you know truth. 1 John chapter 2, verse 4 through 6. He says this, but when we put His life into practice in my life, this is how I get to know Him. The man who says, I know Him. The man who says, I'm a Christian. The man who says, I believe in God. The man who speaks abstractly about, yes, I have a relationship with God, but does not do what He commands, that's truth, doesn't do what He says, is a liar. The truth is not in him. But if anyone obeys His word, you put this into practice, you put His life into practice, God's love is truly made complete in him. And this is how we know we are in Him. Whoever claims to live in Him must walk as Jesus did. And so if you say, yeah, I have a connection with God, I know God, the question really boils down that I have to ask myself, am I living like Jesus? Well, I don't know how Jesus would live. That's your problem. That's where the concrete comes in, where you go in and say, I got to figure out what Jesus would do. How would I know what Jesus would do? It's not through meditation or some, weird thing. It's through a study of His word and study of who He is and the application that we see this all through the scriptures that we begin to see this is what Jesus would do in this situation. And I begin to walk and live as Jesus lived. This is key. 2 John verses 4 and 6. 2 John is a single chapter. He says it's given me great joy. And he goes through this. And this, again, is putting our life into practice, his life into practice in my life. When he says, it gave me great joy when I saw your children, some of your children. He's talking about the Christians there walking in the truth. They're doing what the scriptures say. That's what that means. Walking is putting it into practice, living it out in your life. You're walking in the truth. And he says, and this is love. This is love that we walk in obedience. Our life is a life of obedience to his commands. His command is this, and here is his command. Walk in love. You see how they're connected to one another? And this walk is just living your life. How are you living your life? How are you doing this? And it's putting his life into practice into your life. Knowing the truth and living by it comes through a relationship with Jesus. He's the way, he's the truth, he's the life. Truth is and comes to this lifelong transformation of our lives into Christ likeness. Truth is not a concept, but it is focused in the person of Jesus. Do you want to know what truth is? Define truth. The life of Jesus. What he said, what he did. That's truth. And what is love? Several things. It's a way of life that's bound to God. We've seen these passages, how they're tied together. 2 John verse 6. Do I have that on the screen? I can't remember. I'll have to read it in the Bible if I don't. There it is. His command is that you walk in love. This is how you and God are bound together. His command is you walk in love. So it's tied together. 1 John 4:16, the last part. Whoever, that's you and me, lives in love, lives in God, connected with God, and God in him. So it's a life bound to God, but it's love that was shown to us and demonstrated to us, and then is shown by us or demonstrated by us. And so it's not something that we just kind of talk philosophically about, but it's something that we look at and says, Jesus said, God said, okay, I'm going to show you what love is like. 1 John chapter 3, verse 16 and 7. This is how we know what love is. How do you know what love is? It was demonstrated to us. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And he says, and we ought to lay down our life for our brothers. And so we say, yeah, okay, if it came to it and I had to die for you, yes, I would. But that's so abstract, and so the chances of that happening are pretty remote. that it doesn't make any, it's not concrete. And so John, knowing this, he goes on to say this in verse, as it continued, he said, if anyone has material possessions, oh, okay, that's all of us to a degree, and he sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? In other words, take care of one another. All right, that's how you lay down your life. It's not some abstract, okay, one day I'll die. If someone comes in and starts shooting, I'll take a bullet for you. You know, whatever. You know, the chances of that happening is remote. But he says, but this is how you do it. Take care of one another's needs. Very concrete. Very easy to understand. Very hard to do. There could be several definitions. I'm going to give you one definition, my own personal definition of love. One of them. Love is doing what is right. That's all love is. Doing what is right. First of all, doing. Doing is an action. And actions are all throughout the scriptures. We learn, we have to keep going back to the scriptures to find out what we do. Well, how do I do this? What do I do? Give me something concrete. All right. Help one another, serve one another, teach one another, be kind to one another, be patient with one another, protect one another, encourage one another, persevere with one another. On and on. The scriptures just goes on and on. Here's the things you do. Our problem is that we forget, or we're not in God's word enough to remember, this is what I need to do in my particular circumstance that I'm in. Do what is right. That has to do with truth. What's right? Well, it's found in Jesus. Learning and acting to live like Jesus. Let me give you an example of how this is hard. Hard and easy. I think we begin to understand it, but then it's hard for us to put into practice. Jesus walked through the temple one day. He saw things out of order. Money, tables, and animals, all this. And the story says he began flipping tables. And he made a whip and he started chasing the animals out. Told the people selling doves, take those out of here. He was a little bit upset. Was he doing that in love? Yeah. The answer is yes. That was an act of love. Later on, you read in John chapter 8, a lady comes to him, a woman comes to him. She's brought to him by some very self-righteous people. She's been called an act of adultery. Read the story if you like. It's a beautiful story. And at the end, Jesus says, does anyone condemn you? And she said, no one. He said, I don't condemn you either. Go and sin no more. Was that an act of love? Yes, that's an act of love. If we were in that story and we were the sinful woman, we'd say, he made me feel good. That was a loving thing to do. If we're in the story and we're the money changer, you know, the money changer table, and our money's all over the place, we say he was being mean. That was not a loving thing to do. Both were acts of love. Here's my problem. I'll put it my problem. It's probably your problem. I flip tables when I should be forgiving someone, and I forgive someone when I should be flipping tables. That's my problem. And I think it's your problem, too. We flip tables sometimes when we should be gentle and kind, when we should be forgiving. We're flipping tables. And sometimes we're being kind and gentle when the finger should be in the face and say, get behind me, Satan. That's our problem. You see, this is so simple. Truth and love is wrapped up in Jesus. But when I look at his life, I say, but how? How can I do that? And it's this process, this transformation that we were talking about, this renewing of our mind. You cannot drift through life and grow into the image of Jesus. You can't go from one unthought to another unthought. You can't just go through waiting for retirement when you can just go fishing and nothing else and expect to be transformed into the image of Jesus. It takes thought. It takes a renewing of your mind. It takes effort. It takes encouragement. It takes working together. See, we're in the shallow end. Everyone can understand that. We're ankle high in water now. We're out of the big concepts. It's just get in the Word, study the Word, be with Christians, pray, ask questions, learn, grow. That's the answer. You know, you can't help but love. You're created to love. You're created to respond to love, to seek love, to share love, to be loved. And you will have either God love or worldly love. That's it. Another definition of love could be this. It's what you pursue. It's what has your attention. That is what you love. Every war, every argument, every disaster, every problem can be traced back to misplaced love. You're not loving the way God has taught us to love. To love fame or fortune, to love possessions or power, leads you down a wrong path. What we love demands our attention. It woos us. It attracts us. And it's true of anything we love. Whatever you love, this is the call. You can hear the call of love, whatever it is. Over in Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 8, it's talking about this woman who loves a man. And she says, I hear the voice of the one I love as he comes leaping over the mountains and hills. And that can be true about anything you love. You love money. You hear his voice. You hear his voice of the money I love. He comes leaping over the mountains and hills. You can say the same thing about anything you love. We listen and we follow the voice of whatever and whomever we love. So it's an imperative to love correctly. To love the right thing, in the right thing, in the right way. And that all is revealed through the life of Jesus. Truth is seen in the life of Jesus, the teaching of Jesus, and love is living out his life in my life. All right, that's where I wanted to wake you up again, because that's one of the last things I'm going to say. It's this. If you want to know what truth and love is, it's seen in the life and teachings of Jesus. So the question is, are you looking at the life and teachings of Jesus? If you're not, you got no truth. You're going to forget the truth. If you're not looking at the life and teaching of Jesus, you don't have a clue about how to love. Oh, you have a clue. You have a clue, but you don't really know what love is. Do what is right. You'll love correctly. But the only way you'll know what is right is by living out the life of Jesus. You wonder why I love the Gospels? Because that's where truth is. That's where love is. And Paul and the other letters expound on that. That's why I love John, book of John. He just expounds on that. But I want to call us all to be thinkers and to think, how does my life match up to the life of Jesus? And every one of us is going to say, well, I fall far short. Well, congratulations, we're all in the same boat. But are you growing into the image of Jesus? Are you putting him on? Are you keeping your eyes on Jesus? There's another passage there. Keep your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Because that's the answer to truth. That's the answer to love. If we can help anyone in a public way, our elders are here. At least two of them are here. Maybe a third. I can't see the third, but two are. And they will come forward and be here to greet you, to help you if you have any need that you need to express to them as we sing this song.